This is NHL Radio.
Time now for NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Home Ice.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the NHL Hour. This is Gary Bettman along with Bill Clement. Today, I'm coming to you live from the Pepsi Center in Denver, Colorado, obviously, and Bill Clement is holding down the fort in our New York City studios. The call-in number is 1-877-NHL on XM. That's 1-877-645-6696. We'll get to your call shortly. And we're going to be joined later by the general manager of the Vancouver Canucks, Mike Gillis. And we're in a blizzard in Denver. How are you doing, Mr. Clement?
Better than that. I was going to, that's funny. I was going to say, the weather is probably either beautiful and sunny and 70 degrees, 80 degrees, or you could be in a blizzard. And it's the latter?
It is the latter. They apparently have gotten very little snow this year in Denver. And today they're predicting somewhere between 18 and 24 feet. They're canceling flights left and right. I'm supposed to be in Phoenix tonight, and we'll talk about Darren Pang, who was just on a few minutes ago, because I need to clarify some things he was suggesting. Did I say feet? Sorry. I meant inches. I'm blinded by the snow. 18 to 24 inches. Blizzard warning, blizzard conditions. It's interesting. I am in Denver because I was on a panel today at the Sport Accord, which is an international sport conference primarily related to international competition, the Olympics, World Championships, and all the various governing federations, both from countries and by sport, were here. And Renee Fazell and I were on a panel talking about the interrelationship between professional sports leagues, in our case, and the governing bodies of the sport, in their case, the International Ice Hockey Federation. So I needed to be in Denver today. I went to the game last night, and I have to be in Anaheim on Friday because, among other things, I'm going to be attending a gala at the New Science of Hockey exhibit. And so I figured with a day in between and the Coyotes at home tonight, I would go to Anaheim from Denver via Phoenix, not because there's any urgency, not because there are any deadlines, not because there'll be anything to announce, but simply because I was in the neighborhood, I'd catch a game and use the opportunity to get an update from those who are daily involved in the sale process. So with all due respect to Mr. Pang, somebody who I have the utmost respect and regard for, I think he was a tad hysterical on what my presence in Phoenix might mean tonight. And I may not get there tonight if this weather continues like that. I may be going straight to Anaheim if I can get out of here by tomorrow. We'll see what happens when we get off the radio.
Yeah, 877-645-6696, 645-6696, the number to call if you have a question for the commissioner, Gary Bettman. Now's the time to get in line. What Panger was talking about, Gary, was, and I caught it late, I put on my headset here in the studio late, was that apparently there is an investor or a number of investors that are making offers to join the ownership group of the Phoenix Coyotes. Did you hear more of what Panger was saying than I did?
Well, I don't know how much you heard, but what I believe to be the case, based on the reports that I'm getting from the Jerry Moyes camp and from his lawyer, is that there are at least a couple of interested parties who are either in the process of or considering making an offer. And, so I figured if nothing else, I'd stop in, catch the game, and get an on-the-ground update. We have plenty of time to deal with the schedule or any other quasi-hysterical things if the worst were to happen, and nobody's anticipating the worst. I'm hoping that the reports I'm getting are accurate, meaningful, and have the club and its need for a capital infusion all on the right track.
So when somebody, you know, when somebody comes and says, I want to be one of the owners of a National Hockey League team, who handles the vetting process and what does that entail?
Well, the vetting process very preliminarily involves us when it gets to that point, but we really wait until there's a deal and we're asked to go through the approval process before we actually do the type of due diligence and background investigations that typically go along with the approval of a new owner and the sale of a franchise. I mean, you know, gotcha. This is just another one of these cases where, you know, I go about my business, show up at places because I like to catch games everywhere, and the story becomes more than the reality. But what are you going to do, right?
That's just like, what am I going to do? I got here early, way early today, because I wanted to sit in the big chair.
And how was it feeling for you?
It felt fine until Greg Baldinger kicked me out of it. It felt great.
Did you break anything?
No.
Okay.
Hey, you mean
while you were sitting in the chair. I want to know if I'm going to have a problem with the chair when I get back.
We've got lots of chairs. Don't worry.
I'm not worried. I had that one nicely broken in. A couple of other things. We've got two huge games in the East tonight. Florida 2 points behind 8th place Montreal, and with one fewer game remaining is at Philly. Montreal's at home to Tampa. And in the West, we've got a similar state of affairs. 8th place Edmonton is 1 point ahead of 9th place Nashville, and they're both playing tonight. Edmonton's in Phoenix, where I hope to be, and Nashville is at home to San Jose. And meanwhile, St. Louis, which is just a point behind Nashville and Minnesota and is just 2 points behind Edmonton, is home to Vancouver. And that's obviously an important game for Vancouver as well. And we'll talk later on to Canucks GM Mike Gillis about it. Ryan Miller returns to Buffalo, at least to their lineup. I don't think he's left Buffalo tomorrow night against Toronto. And he's been out since February 21st. And I'm going to quiz you on something, so pay attention. Anaheim left winger Rob Niedermeyer played in his 1,000th NHL regular season game last Thursday night and was honored for his milestone during a pregame ceremony Sunday in which his older brother presented him with a watch on behalf of the entire team. The Niedermeyers are the fourth set of brothers in league history to play 1,000 games each. Do you know the other three?
Shall I give up right now? I would give Bobby and Dennis Hall.
Wrong. Russ and Jeff Courtnall. Kevin and Darian Hatcher.
Oh, wow, that would have been a tough one. All right, okay.
Kevin and Darian Hatcher. And Brent and Ron Sutter.
Wow.
See that? And I mentioned this before, which is one of the reasons I'm going to be in Anaheim. There's an exhibition opening next week at the Discovery Center in Anaheim, and it's in the Ducks' neck of the woods in Santa Ana, California. It's called The Science of Hockey, and it's a 3,000-square-foot interactive exhibit that helps visitors learn the science of hockey by exploring the physics, physiology, and mathematics that apply to our game.
I got to get out there. I would love that.
I bet you would. I'm loving it, too.
Kind of a science and physics guy down at deep at heart, so I'll let's do the show from there next week. What do you say? You can stay out there, and I'll come out.
I will be on the fifth day of a 5-day road trip. I gotta go home and get some clothes. And
the first three days of which may be spent in Denver.
Well, I only once in the last 16 years that I get stuck in a city. I once got stuck in Chicago for 3 days during a blizzard back in 93. But that was about it. Normally, travel works pretty good. Thinking of things that work pretty good, should we start taking calls?
Let's go.
Let's start with Marv in Florida. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204 and Sirius 208. Marv in Florida.
Come on, Marv.
Come on, Marv. Are we having tech problem?
Versus.
Hi.
Oh, there's Marv.
Yes. Marv, are you there?
Hi. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Okay.
Turn down your radio, though.
Blackout rule. My radio's off.
Oh, okay.
It's not on. I would like to talk about the blackout rule. In Florida, all the papers were writing that they could not televise the game because of versus exclusivity. Now, I remember that the Rangers and Islanders televised Monday night games when the Devils were on with versus exclusivity. And then I called your office, Mr. Bettman, and they said that the local channels declined to cover the game rather than that they weren't allowed to. And meanwhile, the NHL got a very bad name because of what the papers were writing. Could you clear that rule up? And the other thing is, can you ever get on the NHL Network and Simulcast?
We're actually talking about doing that. As you know, there's a two-hour show on XM Sirius that is simulcast on the NHL Network from noon to 2 every day. And we're actually talking about simulcasting this show, maybe not for the balance of this season, but perhaps starting next season. I kind of like the radio. Makes me less visible. I'm not sure that I'm television worthy, but we are going to look at it. And if the logistics make sense, then I think we'll do it. I think the answer to your question is I don't remember the MSG network situation, but Versus is entitled to one game a week where they have absolute time exclusivity, the same way that NBC does when they're doing their games. And so if a team chooses to play at the same time that Versus is carrying a different game, then the team that isn't being carried or the game that isn't being carried by Versus may not be televised at the same time. And so if
your office is giving me the wrong information.
I don't know who
that was what the papers wrote, and the office is saying that we could, that they could have carried it, and they chose not to. And the NHL got a very bad name because here Carolina and Florida are fighting for the playoffs. Hockey is finally getting some publicity, and we are watching Jersey in Philadelphia. It just doesn't make sense to me. Can anything be done about it?
Well, what can be done about it is teams need to be a little more cautious when they agree to schedule during a versus window. You know, I don't know who you spoke to at the league office, but during an exclusive versus window, another team is not permitted to televise. And if there was some confusion on the point, I do apologize. But that's been the rule for as long as we've been on versus, and I'm sure that's the reason. Actually, though, Carolina, Florida was a scoreboard feed on Game Center Live, so that was another way to track the game. But again, we occasionally have teams, and I think Florida is one of them, where if not all of the games are going to be televised because the local broadcaster chooses not to televise all the games, then a team may schedule a game during the versus window when their game is otherwise being played because they know there are a certain number of games that aren't going to be carried anyway. But that's why that happens. And again, if you contact us and let us know who you spoke to in the office, I'll try and get to the bottom of why you got the information you did. Let's talk to Brian in Virginia. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM.
Hey, guys. Great show. How's everything going today?
We're okay. What about you? I think we lost the caller. Are we having problems back in New York? I'm hearing feedback out of New York on these calls, and I'm also hearing when you're picking up the calls and finding out who's on the line. Can we do something about the tech glitches? I know it's a little tough because I'm here in Denver and you guys are back in New York, but something doesn't seem to be working quite right.
Gary, I'm going to get right on that.
Please do.
Were I sitting in your chair, this probably wouldn't be happening.
Why is that?
The chair. It's the magic of the chair.
Well, I don't know about that, and I apologize to our listeners because we've done this on remote before and we haven't had these problems. So can we try Brian from Virginia again, guys?
I'm back.
All right, Brian.
There you go, Brian. Thank you. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. My question was concerning Evgeny Malkin last Thursday night, I think the game was, where in the last seconds of the game, he clearly took a headshot instead of playing the puck. And he basically got a small fine. And Ben Eager does the same thing just about, and he's suspended 3 days, 3 games.
Well, as I repeatedly say, supplemental discipline is like a snowflake, to use the apt analogy for what's going on in Denver today. No two are the same. Hockey operations looked at it. They probably looked to see if there were any prior incidents that either player had. A fine indicates that the next time Malkin has one of these situations, he's a repeat offender, and the penalties will be more severe. But our guys look at these very carefully, and they make the very tough judgments in terms of how much discipline, if any, they think is required. But I assure you, you know, as similar as they look, I guarantee you they weren't identical. Let's talk to...
Oh, I agree. They definitely weren't identical. And Ben Eager's obviously more of a player that's apt to do and has a history. But we just kind of find it, you know... I mean, I'm glad they gave him a fine as opposed to nothing at all. But it kind of leads the hockey world to believe that it's a little favoritism to Malkin. He's going to be on the NBC Game of the Week on Sunday. And heaven forbid he should be suspended for that game.
Well, but it may be, and you hit the point. I don't have it off the top of my head. Eager could have been a repeat offender. And Malkin, as a first-time offender, could have been getting a fine as a warning. But he's now in the category of if he does it again, he's a repeat offender. And again, as you just said, the two shots weren't really identical. And when you weigh it all together, my guess is, as they generally do, hockey ops got it right. Let's go to Ken in New Jersey. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM.
Yes, hi. How are you doing, Gary? I know you guys that, you know, you're doing a great job with Versus, and I just had a little concern. I was watching the Rangers a couple weeks ago, or actually as recently as this week, and they had these male enhancement ads on TV, and then my 10-year-old daughter asked me what it's all about, and they run these ads constantly. And I'd like to know why they have to run those ads on Versus. Is there no other sponsor they can get other than male enhancement? And I have three kids that are turning into hockey fans, and quite frankly, I'm not going to have them watch Versus if they're going to continue to show these type of ads.
You know, not to defend it or criticize it, but the fact of the matter is these ads are everywhere now. Versus isn't the only outlet that carries these ads, and you know, my guess is lots of other sports and lots of other outlets, either over the air or on cable, are also carrying them. And, you know, we'll absolutely relay to Versus that we've gotten feedback that fans don't like it. But I think in terms of the advertising marketplace, it's a fact of life that these ads are everywhere. I guess it all means we have to talk to our kids a little more candidly about some of the things that are going on in this world. But it is what it is. Rick
and
Massachusetts.
Can a network on a moral issue just say, hey, we don't want your ads? Even if it's a legitimate product that's sold everywhere?
Sure. Yeah, networks all the time make decisions to not carry certain types of ads for a variety of reasons. It's not anything that we have any control over. And again, I don't think it's fair to single out Versus. These ads are everywhere, and they're in lots of different sports properties. And in fact, you know, there are issues. It's not just male enhancement products. There are issues about, you know, a variety of other products that could be out there. Sometimes people have issues relating to hard liquor. And, you know, my guess is there are countless other products. There's probably a product that any person, you know, could decide that they don't particularly like. We live in countries, Canada and the U.S., where there's free speech. It's up to the network to decide what it wants, subject, I suppose, to obscenity laws. Let's talk to Rick from Massachusetts. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM.
I think Rick, we lost Rick, Gary.
We did? Well, I wouldn't know that because I can't see the board that you guys have there. So should we talk to Tom from New York? Tom, are you there? Sure. Bill and Gary?
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Yeah, hi, guys. Gary, two questions on the Islanders. If this Lighthouse project falls through, what are your thoughts about moving them to Queens and Willards Point, if it's viable? And two, I live 20 minutes from Nassau Coliseum, and when games are on the Overflow Channel on the MSG Network, my particular city in southern Westchester doesn't show them. So basically that means I can't watch the games, and I can't listen to the games on radio unless I have satellite radio. So is there some kind of regional divide where Devils games can be shown in New Jersey and Islander games can be shown in New York for overflow games.
Who's your cable operator?
Time Warner.
Okay, and I think the issue there is that MSG doesn't have an agreement that has the overflow channel being carried on Time Warner. And that...
No, it does, actually, because it showed, but it's very rare. It's haphazard. Maybe 10% of the games are showed.
I think, and we can check on this as well, I think you need to check with Time Warner as to why they're carrying the overflow channel sometimes and not others. It may be a question of channel capacity on a given night in terms of when they do that. My guess is if you were a Cablevision subscriber, which you can't be, you'd probably get all the games and all of the MSG channels. But again, that's just a question of the local cable operator and what it chooses to carry and what its contractual relationship is with the MSG networks. With respect to the Islanders, we are focusing on making sure that everything's done possible to get the Lighthouse project to go forward. I'm hopeful we never have to think about the alternatives. Charles Wong has been at this for years. He's obviously committed to the Islanders, to the Lighthouse project, and to Long Island, and we're hoping that Nassau County and the town of Hempstead give him the approvals to move forward so this great project can go forward and so that the Islanders can get a renovated arena, which they so desperately need. There's no question about it. This team, you know, at some point, whenever this lease is over, is going to have a new facility or a renovated facility to play in. There's no question about that. You know, I've heard speculation about the Willets Point project in Queens, but I don't think at this stage it's any more than that, and I'd rather focus on getting the Lighthouse project done because that would be the best resolution for this. By the way,
we're going to step out,
Before you do that, Eager is a repeat offender. He was suspended in October, which is why Malkin got a fine and Eager got a suspension.
It's all coming together. We're going to take our first break. We're going to give Commissioner Gary Bettman a chance to locate a shovel and prepare to dig out of the snowstorm in Denver. One way or the other, we're going to get to many more calls when we come back on the NHL Hour.
And if there's someone you can just shove out,
all right. I dig this, baby. You don't care for me. I don't know, care about that. You got a new boo. I'd like to laugh at. I have only one, a burning desire. Let me stand next to your fire.
Hi, this is Dion Phaneuf of the Calgary Flames, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, everyone. This is the NHL Hour with me, Gary Bettman, and Bill Clement. And joining us on the phone is Mike Gillis, general manager of the Vancouver Canucks. Mike is the 10th general manager in Vancouver. Mike, welcome.
Thank you very much.
You were an NHL player. You represented NHL players in, I think, something like 15 years as a player agent, and now you're a team executive. Can you compare what your life was like in each of those roles?
Sure. As a player, I began playing in the league at 19, and I would have to say inexperienced and not very knowledgeable about how difficult it was to play in the National Hockey League. Then lawyer and player representative. It was in a time of dramatic economic changes in the National Hockey League, with salaries increasing and the rights of players increasing over time, and that was an interesting period that was engaging and difficult, but satisfying in a lot of ways. And now as a team executive, it's probably the most challenging time I've had in the last 10 months getting this organization into shape and getting the players that we wanted to attract here and trying to create a number of different initiatives. So it's been, all three phases have been interesting and fascinating and a lot of fun.
What made you think you wanted to get in on the team management side, and what was the process you went through to do that?
Well, I had been asked on a few occasions before while I was representing players if I would consider jobs on the team side, and there was only one that I very seriously considered. So I had been through some processes before. When this occurred, it literally happened in about 48 hours, and didn't really go through any process other than picking up the phone and speaking to the Aquilinis, who own our team, and giving them a description of where I thought the team was and what I thought needed to be done with it if it was going to be successful. And they decided that sounded okay, so they agreed to provide the resources necessary for me to want to have the job. So it's worked out pretty well.
What would you say, and I'm going to ask you two things, but they may have the same answer. What was the biggest surprise to you when you finally got in and were a member of team management, and what's been the most difficult aspect of the job?
The biggest surprise was probably no surprise in that this organization was run how I expected it to be run, and there was a lot of things that needed attention. And the first couple of months were extremely intense in terms of evaluating people and evaluating the organization and where it was and where I wanted to go. And oftentimes you have to resist the urge to get ahead of yourself and enact change immediately, which was a real challenge. And I think that has proven to be, surprising to me that I had to be more patient in order to enact change and in order to try and create a culture here that I believe is going to lead to success. And what was your second question, Gary? I can't remember it.
Well, I had asked what was the biggest surprise and what was the most difficult or most challenging thing that you had to do?
Without a doubt, the most challenging thing is letting people go. And it's never a pleasant thing, but, we developed a business plan. The first person I hired was Lawrence Gilman, and together and with Lauren Henning and some other people that we advanced in the organization, we developed a business plan, and we stuck with that plan. And part of that plan was a very critical evaluation of everybody here, and we came to the conclusion that we had to lose some people in order to advance, and that was those were challenging times.
You represented players, obviously. So did Peter Chiarelli, Brian Burke, Brian Lawton. Is there a trend here? Are you part of the new breed of general managers who's had experience on both sides of the table? And if so, what special attributes do you think that gives you?
I'm not sure if it's a trend. I think that some of us have just been around so long that it's a war of attrition. But I think that having been a player, having practiced corporate commercial law, having represented players in a number of adversarial situations and very positive situations, it just gives you maybe a little bit more well-rounded perspective on what people are feeling when they are in these jobs and the pressure that they feel in these positions. And it might allow for not greater appreciation, but greater understanding of everyone's role throughout an entire hockey organization. And might allow for a little bit different thought processes and a little bit more openness towards success. I don't know, but I think for me personally, and I won't speak for others, but for me personally, it brings a perspective that we really want to see our players succeed, and we're prepared to do whatever it takes to allow them to succeed. And I think it helps in the evaluation process, and it creates a stronger bond between all of the members of the organization. And We're going to hope and see if that's successful.
You know, speaking of the players succeeding, got involved with a sleep study as it relates to the players and their sleep patterns. Do you want to share what that was all about and the conclusions that were reached with our listeners?
Sure, I'm going to caution you that the only reason I'll speak about it is because the players wore sleep bands on their wrists and the media guy saw them all, and so it's one of five or six initiatives that we've begun, and obviously it's the most prevalent one, the most noticeable one. But what we did was I was convinced that that sleep patterns and that we have some of us have innate problems with sleep, and with our travel schedule, because we're geographically challenged in the West, we were looking towards any edge we might have in how we traveled, practice times, and individually to assist players that may have a sleep disorder. And even though we didn't take in the specific individual results, we allowed the doctors to go to the players individually. We got generalizations about the sleep habits of our players, and we found out a lot of things. Presumptions that had been made in the past were clearly incorrect. Our guys don't sleep on planes, even though we thought they did. With time zone changes, we have a much better opportunity to keep our guys healthy and injury-free if we practice at similar times every day. And so we've moved our practices back when we're in the East so that they replicate the same time zone here in the West. We've changed our travel patterns significantly to try and allow for our guys to sleep. You know, the old adage that you lift after a game, we've tried to change that. So we've made a series of changes. We're going to evaluate it at the end of the day. We're going to interview each of the players and find out whether or not they felt that it helped them. But we feel we're seeing some effects, and our coaching staff have noticed some effects. So it's led to a series of conclusions, but we don't know the final answers yet.
We're talking to Mike Gillis, general manager of the Vancouver Canucks. You've got a huge game tonight. You've got another one tomorrow at Colorado, and what could be a showdown for fourth in the West at Chicago on Sunday. How does the pressure of this race feel, and how does the pressure as a general manager feel compared to when you were playing?
Well, when you're playing, you have a physical outlet that you know, you can utilize in the course of a game. You can hit somebody. You get prepared for the game. You dissipate energy through the playing of the game. As a general manager, it's very difficult to do that, and I think the stress level is acute in the West. It's been a playoff race from basically Christmas onward. You know, we've had some serious ups and downs this year with losing a number of games in January to going on a roll and winning a number of successive games. So it's been a roller coaster ride. But I think even though tonight's game is a big game, we've approached it the last 2 months like every game is a big game. And anything less than that in the West, you know, you'll lose out of a playoff spot perhaps or make life extremely difficult on yourself. So we've been preparing. We've been playing the playoffs for the last 2 months to get into the playoffs. So it's an interesting time. I think our guys are really looking forward to the next 10 games and the challenges they present, solidifying a solid spot in the playoffs and being injury free. So that's what we're hoping for.
You know, you touched on this before. With your fingers on the pulse of the team, which you do as, among other things, as general manager, how do you explain being a team in the same season that lost 9 straight at home and then won 11 straight at home? That seems to be about two ends of the extreme that you could ever find in the course of one season.
Well, it is, and it was an extremely challenging time in January. We had a number of players injured, and then players were coming back into the lineup that, you know, it takes them a few games or a week to get back into the swing of things. We had our number one player out with Roberto being injured for what we felt was going to be a month, but then it extended into 2 months when he had a slight setback. So, and in addition, we were being extremely conservative. So some of those games we may have not iced our best lineup on purpose because we were trying to get everybody so that they were 100%. But it was a remarkably challenging time. One of the things that I've been really lucky with here is to have good people around who help me make decisions and help us evaluate things rationally. And we were very confident in our coaching staff throughout that process. We realized the injury problems that we had. And with parity in this league now and how strong the teams are, if you have three or four players out of your lineup, it's very difficult to win games. And we understood that, and we knew it, and we were patient, and we were confident that our team would rebound when everyone was healthy, and that's what's happened.
Yeah, speaking of the injuries, I mean, Roberto Luongo is always considered to be one of the best goaltenders in the league. He was out, as you said, for a couple of months. Can you talk about what his loss meant to the team and coming back, and also talk about adding Matt Sundin to the team and what that has meant?
Sure. Roberto's loss was monumental, and even though our support goalies played well, when you lose your number one goalie for a significant period of time, you know, it can be, it just creeps up on you, and before you know it, you get into a rut where players begin to lose confidence and different things happen. You know, what happened in New Jersey when Marty went down was remarkable to all of us, that team continued to perform at the levels that it did, and you know, it was. I think that was a unique situation that I can't see being replicated very often. Coincidentally, with Roberto returning, we did get Matt Sundin signed. We made a determination that we were going to be very patient and leave the appropriate cap space available to try and get either Matt's or another high-profile player through trade or before the deadline. And we were extremely fortunate to add Matt to our lineup. He is a consummate professional. He has come in here and fit in seamlessly with our group of players. He provides tremendous leadership for us. He is an extremely hardworking player. He's a player that I believe will be a candidate for the Hall of Fame. And he has really changed the makeup of our team by adding depth and a big center iceman who can compete against any center iceman in the league. So he's been a tremendous addition for us.
One last question, Mike Gillis, before I let you go. Canucks are 15-4-1 in the last 20 games. I think that's the best record in the league over that span. How are you feeling at this stage of the season as you're looking to the playoffs, and what are the key factors to keep the string going?
I think the key factors for us are to try and remain injury-free. I think we have a good team. We have a well-balanced team from top to bottom. We're capable of scoring goals. We're capable of playing well defensively. So I think the keys to our success and continued success is to try and do the best we can in having our players stay healthy and rested and well-prepared. You know, the playoffs are obviously, it's going to be my first time as the manager of a team in the playoffs. We are trying to get as well prepared as we possibly can. Everyone in the organization is focused on the goal of winning the Stanley Cup. And, you know, it's a tremendously anxious time, but also a very exciting time. I don't think that any team going into the Western Conference playoffs is discounting their opportunity to emerge. I think it's a very, very strong conference, and if your goaltender's strong and you remain injury-free, who knows what can happen. So we're excited about it.
Well, we wish you good luck. Thank you, Mike, for being with us today, and we'll catch you through the rest of the season. That was Mike Gillis, general manager of the Vancouver Canucks.
Now, what a job he has done with his troops out there now that they're healthy, and I agree with him. If the Vancouver Canucks can stay healthy, they're a good bet to make some waves in the playoffs. NHL Hour will continue. The phone number here, 877-645-6696, 645-6696. We'll get back to your calls right after this. Hey,
Hi, this is Andre Kopitar with the LA Kings, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, everybody. Mr. Clement, should we go to the callers?
We should, but I must compliment you on your selection of music today.
I didn't select that song, did you?
No, I'm not talking about. There was some Hendrix mixed in there. Did you select any of the music today?
I think Hendrix
take
was
credit
off
for
of a,
it.
Was Hendrix and the Doors were off a prior list, but there was a little Southern rock there for you. That's okay.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that.
We do every little thing we can for you, and while we're taking care of things, why don't we go back to Byron from California, who I believe we had technical difficulties with before. Byron, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to speak with both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
My question's in regard to ownership. I know there's owners like Tom Hicks of the Stars, who owns a baseball team and part owner of a soccer team. You get Jerry Moyes in Phoenix, who owns several trucking companies, one of which I work for. With the economic uncertainty, is that something you would like to see go away and get owners in the future that are more focused on the hockey instead of being spread out over so much other stuff?
Well, I think most of our owners have various business interests, and whether or not they're in other industries or they're in other sports, the fact is every business and every industry is being affected by the economy, some more than others. I don't have a problem with any of our owners having multiple sports ownerships. And in fact, you know, there are situations where there'll be two teams owned by a particular owner, and they'll own the arena as well. So sometimes it makes a lot of sense, but it doesn't trouble me at all. I think it's more important that the businesses that they're in are healthy and that their own personal financial situation is healthy and that nobody's over-leveraged in a time where credit is tough to get. But, again, having a guy who's a sportsman or a lady who's a sportsman and passionate about sports, as long as the hockey team isn't getting short shrift and none of our owners have been giving their team short shrift, I don't have a problem with it at all. Another example, Stan Kroenke owns the Nuggets, the Avalanche, and the Pepsi Center where we're sitting. I think that's a good thing, and I think it's also good for the communities that they're in. Why don't we go to Robert from Tucson? You're on with Bill and Gary.
Hi.
This is Sirius
XM. Pleasure to be on the phone with both of you today.
Well, thank you.
My question is this. You know, as commissioner, is there any situations, or what's the biggest one? If you ever get off the phone with somebody in your office, or you go back to your office and you just sit down, breathe out a deep sigh, and go, God, that is my biggest nightmare. This is my biggest challenge as being a commissioner. What drives you nuts the most?
Well, let me
give you... If there's anything at all. I mean, there's got to be something.
The big thing, obviously, was when we were at a disconnect with the Players Association and we had to go through the season off. Probably nothing will reach that level in terms of its impact and magnitude. And fortunately, we came out of that very well. On any given day, you know, there may be something happen. There may be an issue at the club level. There may have been something that happened on the ice. But, you know, we don't have the luxury of worrying just about any one thing. This is, you know, a game where we're playing 1,230 times during the regular season. Our teams are traveling thousands of miles through the middle of the night. We have 20 million people come through our arenas. We have NHL.com. We have our own network. We have lots of relationships with television broadcasters. There's no shortage of issues, and they're all important because everything we do is in the public eye. But if I had to point to one thing that was the biggest challenge, it was getting the game and the economic structure of the league straightened out. And it took a while, and it was hard. Fortunately, it got us to a place that's made the game stronger and more entertaining for our fans. Let's talk to Ronnie from Prince Albert. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Hello?
Yes,
good,
how are
good.
You?
I just got a question regarding the, or your get your take on this regarding the NHL awards ceremonies. They moved into Las Vegas, I understand, to make it more accessible to the average fan. Yet when I go on the Ticketmaster to get the tickets, they're $504 a piece plus a $32 convenience charge. Now, I consider myself as average as the next guy, but yet that's not accessible to me, being as, you know, if I want to take my spouse, that's $1,000.
This is a special, unique event. It's one that's always had a fairly significant ticket price. There's a charitable component as well. And we're doing this in Vegas in part because the Players Association is going to be having their meetings there, and we want to be in a position to have as many players as possible attend. And we're going to use this as an opportunity to gather the NHL family, our business partners, our sponsors, and fans, because we're in a venue that will be more open to the public than perhaps we've had an opportunity to do in advance. As we move forward, we're hoping that this will, as an attraction and as an event, elevate the status of the event and to cause it to be something that's quite significant on the NHL calendar as people are connecting with the game and viewing the various things we do. It's a big event. I mean, you know, there are certain big events that by definition just are more expensive than others. For example, the Winter Classic tickets are typically more than a typical regular season game. Again, it's a function of trying to take an event and make it an even bigger event, and we're hoping that Vegas creates that type of excitement. Let's talk to John in Minnesota. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM. John in Minnesota, are you there?
We're going to swing at the ball again.
We'll try. Some technical glitches. We apologize again to our listeners, but I guess that's part of the challenge of having us split up in a number of places. Buddy from Nashville, you're on with Bill and Gary, we hope. This is Sirius XM.
Hey, how you doing, Gary?
Good, how are you?
I got to talk to you in Nashville. Got to talk to you when you're in Nashville and ask you a question about fighting. You were talking about rules of engagement being looked at. And since then, last week, we saw a situation where Brad Staubitz used some type of mixed martial arts move in bludgeoning Jordan Tutu with his elbow pads. And there was a quote in the Tennessean today from Colin Campbell saying that hitting him with a piece of equipment worn legally, there was no rule against that. Three-part question here. Is that true about that? I mean, what would prevent somebody from hitting somebody with a stick if that is the actual case? Secondly, why would it have not been called an elbowing charge since he did use the elbow, which is the first rule under elbowing in the definition? And thirdly, would it have been different had it not been a repeat offender in Jordan Tutu as opposed to, say, Sidney Crosby or somebody like that that received the blow?
Well, first of all, you can't hit somebody with your stick. There are rules against that,
right?
And you get suspended for that. And secondly, you can't hit somebody. You can't take off your helmet and swing it at somebody. You can't be hitting with a piece of equipment. I didn't see Coley's quote. My guess is that he was focusing on the fact that for whatever reason he didn't think supplemental discipline may have been warranted. And again, it's not the person who is the victim of the act that determines whether or not there's a suspension. It's the act itself. And my belief is we were probably dealing with an act that hockey operations determine, while it could have warranted a penalty, not everything gets called as it's supposed to. But the fact of the matter is it didn't warrant supplemental discipline. And reasonable people can always differ on that. Let's go to Tom from Michigan. You're on with Bill and Gary. Tom from Michigan.
I think we're getting closer. Gary. What about Chris from Connecticut?
We can take
Chris seems to have been with us holding patiently for quite a while. Let's go to Chris in Connecticut.
That sounds good. Chris,
Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good.
Hey, Gary.
How are you?
I'm good. So I've got a question, and I also want your take on this. I've been hearing rumors that you were thinking about taking away the trapezoid in the back of the net. And when that was introduced, that kind of got me PO'd because, I mean, they took it out because goalies were going out and shooting the puck, you know, halfway up the ice to the players. I mean, if Alexander Ovechkin scores 70 goals in a season, are you going to make the net smaller?
Well, actually, the rumor that we're thinking of taking the trapezoid out is not true. And the reason that the trapezoid is there is to keep the goaltenders from handling the puck as much, because we're trying to encourage forechecking. And we sense, the sense we had, the managers, the competition committee, was that when the goaltenders were going out and playing the puck, the guys weren't coming into forecheck and trying to force offensive pressure. And we think it has worked extremely well, as we've used it the last 3.5 seasons. So we're not thinking about making a change in that regard at all. Ryan from Victoria, B.C., you're on Sirius XM with Bill and Gary.
Hi, Bill and Gary. How are you guys?
We're good. How are you?
I'm doing very good. I'm actually a big Canuck fan. I hear a lot of stuff about the Canucks, not just everything but great stuff lately. They have a very big shot at catching Calgary Flames right now. I want you guys' thoughts on that. And second of all, Mr. Bettman, what are you guys going to do about goaltenders like Marty Turco coming out of their crease to come play a puck? Because a lot of talk shows in Vancouver yesterday were talking about Turco should be fair game, you know, like they had Hordichuk put on Turco. Are you guys going to do something about that, or are you guys still going to protect the goaltenders? Because I think if a goaltender comes out to play a puck that far, I think he should be fair game.
Well, when both players, a goaltender and an offensive player, are going for the puck, they both have equal space and equal opportunity to get to the puck. But you can't, just because a goaltender's straying, you have to avoid as much contact as possible. He's not in the same position as a skater is, but you can make contact with him as long as it's not excessive and as long as you're trying to play the puck. You know, we don't want to see our goaltenders get hurt. And by the same token, they're not immune from being touched at all when they stray from the crease. Jason in Boston, you're on with Bill and Gary.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I just want to make this quick. Commissioner, I love the game. You and I sometimes disagree with some of your stuff, but I still love the game. And, Mr. Clint, I'm a huge Flyers fan up here in Boston. I mean, I'm a nut. Commissioner, I changed my train of thought because I just got my bill 2 seconds ago because I'm a Bruins season ticket holder. And I have a question for the playoffs. I mean, why are the Cup final games so expensive? I mean, I'm looking at a price of a ticket of close to $275 a ticket. I'm like, I was going to ask about the officiating, but I'm like, holy cow, I just got my bill 2 seconds ago. I just bought the whole strips for the playoffs.
What were the ticket price increases for the first round?
The ticket prices, they stayed the same. They started off at $56, and all of a sudden they went up to $257 for the cup final.
As we talked before, special events, but I think the fact that they've held the ticket prices, I think, for the first two rounds of the playoffs, and that they've held their season ticket prices for next season, tells you a lot about how the Bruins are valuing their fans.
Gary, good luck in shoveling out there, okay? At least you're dealing with an airport that's state-of-the-art dealing with snow.
Let's hope so.
All right.
I'll see you next week.
Commissioner Gary Bettman landing in Phoenix. That's it for the NHL Hour. Coming up next, in the slot, Phil Esposito and Mike Ross. Lots of great games tonight and more on the weekend. We will see you next Thursday at 4 Eastern for more action on the NHL Hour. Until then, have a great week of hockey, everybody.
For more podcasts, check out NHL.com.